driving you home every weekday afternoon. This is 105 Drive with Julian Clover. Cambridge
105. Lawrence, you are most welcome.
Thank you, Julian.
How are you feeling?
Not so great, but surviving.
Okay.
I think it's dwindling, this cold.
Gadget Guide, then, between now and 6 o'clock. What are we going to be talking about this time?
So, yeah, thanks, Julian. Welcome to Gadget Guide number 56, or the 18th one this year. And just a quick wrap-up of tech news first, since there's been a fair bit of stuff since we last spoke on the Gadget Guide when we visited Mark in Burwell and looked at his home automation. So, things that have been cropping up and coming out from various manufacturers. Firstly, Google have announced a bunch of new Nexus devices. The Nexus 6, their new phone, which will have a 5.9-inch screen, their Nexus 9 tablet, their Nexus Player, which is sort of a souped-up Chromecast, for those people who know what the Chromecast is. All of those will ship with their next version of Android, so Android version 5, or Lollipop, which is also going to be available for consumers from about the 3rd of November for existing devices. So Nexus 4, 5, 7, and 10 will be getting that on or around the 3rd of November. Some other updates from Google. The LG G Watch R is a new product from LG in the Android Wear range. This one has a round screen. So it's basically the round version of the square one.
Because our watch is supposed to have round screens. New innovation, a watch with a round screen. Coming next, the square wheel.
Yeah, it's going to put them another step ahead of Apple's watch when it comes out, which is square. Also, some updates. If you have an Android Wear device already, you should be seeing 4.4W2 soon on your watch. And something that Google are trying to get right is an iOS version of Android Wear, which will then allow your Android watch to talk to your iPhone.
That's interesting, because presumably that then means that, well, two things. Depends of how when they get it going. If they get it going before Apple bring out their Apple Watch, that could be a chunk of customers who aren't going to go the way of Cupertino.
Especially since the Android watches are selling about half the price that Apple's launch price of the Apple Watch is listed at. Of course, Apple might just not allow the Android app into the iTunes store.
Hmm. Interesting. Yes, and then I guess by the time any court cases have gone their way through, it will be a bit too late anyway.
Version 5 of the products, yes. The other new thing from Google in the last few days is Google Inbox. So this is a neat new way to manage your Gmail account. It's by invitation, but you can get an invitation fairly easily. Send an email from your Gmail account to inbox@google.com and say, I'd like an invitation. Mine took about 20 hours to arrive. New app for your iPhone and for Android devices, which then activates the inbox on your Gmail account. It automatically manages your email, so it starts to flag things as lower priority based on whether you read that sort of email straight away, whether the content is stuff that is relevant to you. So marketing emails, for example, PayPal sending you an email saying our latest whatever, will be marked as low priority.
There are, I'm trying to remember the name, there was a paid for service,
yes,
that I did a trial for and didn't succeed, because I just found it too annoying, really. By the time it had learned all the things that I wanted to teach it in terms of what was important to me, I got fed up with it.
So I turned this on yesterday, and it knew exactly what was relevant to me straight away. It looked at my inbox and it went, you've got 1,100 odd emails in your inbox. These ones are all low priority. And I had a look and it was like, yes, those are all low priority.
Oh, that's just plain scary.
So it is quite scary. Other news stuff. Amazon launched yesterday their Fire TV set-top box, £79. Plug it into your TV. Very similar to either Chromecast, Nexus Player, Apple TV.
That, and all the usual suspects on there as well.
Yes.
If you change the title, it could have been Roku.
Yes. The difference is they have put a much beefier amount of hardware in it. So it has a better processor, it has a better graphics engine, it has a better sound system. So it actually will do full Dolby 7.1 sound. Obviously, you've got to have the surround sound system to plug that into. But they're saying that this is going to run apps a lot better, so you'll be able to run games and so on. It becomes a mini gaming console. So that's very interesting from Amazon.
They're starting to differentiate themselves in the market then, because you've got to pick up a Roku box, a brand that is now TV for Sky, for around about £10 now, can't you?
Under £10 for Sky's Christmas special, and you get them all blingy and shiny and gold and glittery and whatever. New things from Cupertino. Apple launched their iPad Air 2 and their iPad Mini 3 in the last few days, both getting rave reviews from everyone who is into their iPads. And they also launched macOS Yosemite as the update for your iMac and your MacBooks. Very big update, so it will take a while to download and install.
I've done the update. It did take a while to download and install.
Roughly.
I'm trying to remember now, because I kind of did it overnight and then realised there was part two, which was still going to take another, because it needed sort of me to sort of set it off and do the terms and conditions thing.
It's not automatic halfway through. It integrates a lot more stuff, so you'll start to find a lot more of your Apple devices actually work in symphony with each other, as I think you've discovered between your iPhone, as I warned you, if you've logged into your iPad and your phone with the same Apple ID and you get a phone call on your phone, it will ring on your iPad.
It's very annoying. This has caught me out a couple of times, actually. We probably realise tried to have the phones on silent, but that doesn't help when you're reading from a script on your iPad and suddenly you get a phone call from the device on the other side of the studio.
So everyone who knows Julian personally, ring him during the news.
I tell you something, the number of people who do and know where I should be at this time still cool. It's very annoying.
Last few things. Samsung launched their Galaxy Note 4, slightly smaller screen at 5.7 inches. And the other big one is a Kickstarter campaign from a crowd called Hendo, who have finally brought the Back to the Future rave product, hoverboards.
Oh, no.
And it does magnetic levitation. So right now it only works over a conductive surface, but will levitate a good inch and a half off the ground. Batteries last about 7 minutes. Currently, if you want one, $10,000 is a backer.
Ah, bargain.
Anyway, welcome back to the Gadget Guide, where we're going to be talking about the Internet of Things. You've probably heard the term mentioned a fair bit, I would imagine, Julian.
I have, but one's never entirely sure what it means.
It's big, woolly, nebulous.
It seems to be one of those things that people trot out to make themselves sound clever, but so, nobody's actually really defined what it is.
I found some nice official-type definitions.
Okay.
So one of them is, it's a concept in which objects and people are deployed with unique identifiers, so think about that as an address or a phone number, and the ability to transfer data automatically through the network without human-to-human or human-to-computer interaction. So in other words, your device can go off and chat to things without you having to think about it.
But you've told your device to do
you've
that.
You've given your device
permission
to do it. Okay, so you've granted it the authority to send information, and then it can just carry on and do things. Now, there's been quite a lot of interesting acquisitions in Cambridge recently around the whole Internet of Things. So two of the recent ones were Huawei bought Neural for $25 million. Neural have been doing a lot of work around narrowband cellular Internet of Things. So they're using less than 1 gigahertz frequency radios for low data rate devices, but things that will have exceptionally long battery life. So they're not talking about things that are going to do internet access or voice communications like your mobile phone. These are sort of things that are going to send measurements and bits of information, you know, a few times a day or maybe every hour or so. And data rates of 100 bits per second to about 10 kilobits per second. So very, very slow speed data, high latency as well, 500 milliseconds to a whole second for latency. So totally unsuitable for voice, video, internet stuff. But, you know, if you've got a device on your roof that's sending the temperature or the wind speed, or you've got devices on all the roofs in Cambridge sending temperatures and wind speed, that sort of information starts to become quite useful when you collect that much of information together, because that number of sensors lets you get a bigger picture. You know, the City of Chicago have been doing a project recently where they've been putting up sensors on streetlights and covering entire suburbs to get an idea of what's going on in the environment. And they're sort of saying things like, well, we can now know when it's starting to snow in an area, when it's getting cold enough that we need to send the gritters out, because
there have been, funnily enough, you mentioned Neural a few moments ago. They're involved in something called TV White Spaces,
yes,
which is the bit of frequencies or portion of frequencies, be it between what's used for the television.
It's all the areas of frequency that were freed up when analog TV got turned off.
Yeah.
So yes, all of those spare channels.
And one of the projects that they're doing is just that sort of thing. I'm trying to remember exactly where. Somewhere in the northwest of England, I think. Well, there are some, you know, Newell and a couple of other Cambridge firms
involved.
They've been
working with Cambridge, with Microsoft Research, just on Tennyson and Station Road, on a lot of projects around this sort of thing. So, I mean, like I was saying, the City of Chicago's project that they're doing with some of the national laboratories there and some of the universities, they're starting to be able to predict things like they know exactly which street to send a gritter down based on the temperature of that road, and they know when it's going to freeze and things like that. So useful information, environmental stuff like that. And they're saying, you know, more people are walking around with smartphones and devices on them that can capture this sort of information, temperature, barometric pressure and so on. We've got all these sensors. When you start to collect that information, it gets really interesting. So that's you know, this Internet of Things idea, that things are creating measurements, delivering them to a big central amount of collection that can then be turned from just raw data into useful knowledge and information. The other big acquisition was Qualcomm bought Cambridge Silicon Radio for $2.5 billion fairly recently. Now, Cambridge Silicon Radio invented Bluetooth. Qualcomm have got some overlap in their technologies. So
they do the mobile phone stuff, don't they?
They do a lot of GSM chips and so on. So it's a nice merger for that type of technology coming together. So it's going to be interesting to see what starts coming out of the combined company, because a lot more devices are getting Bluetooth and it's becoming a lot cheaper to put it in your device. So, like I said, a lot of wearable devices like that. But, you know, thinking about other things. So the two other things that most of us have got, we've got a house and we've got a car. So on the house side, Google have got a bunch of products out, the Nest range, which we haven't really discussed much on the Gadget Guide, but very quickly they've got two products, the Nest Protect and the Nest Thermostat. Now, the Nest Protect, everyone says, why would you want a Wi-Fi enabled smoke detector? And you think, well, that sounds a bit nuts. And you look at the price of it, and it is about £75-80, and it's expensive for a smoke detector. It's also a CO2 detector. But what it can do is, first of all, it defeats that problem of you've made toast and your smoke alarm's going off. So the first thing it does, when you get a bit of smoke, it won't sound the alarm. It will, in a loud voice, say, smoke detected. So it's quite polite. You can monitor it from your smartphone, and you can silence it from your smartphone and say, no, I'm making toast. It will send you alerts to your phone. It will send
you see, I quite like that, and I don't know what the fire authorities would say about it, but one thing they say is, don't take the battery out of your smoke alarm to shut it up.
Correct.
Which is exactly the sort of thing that people do when the toast burns.
So if you ignore the spoken voice, it will then sound a proper smoke alarm siren, so it has got the whole loud annoyance in it as well. So it is fully safe, and it's got all the necessary approvals for sale in the UK. And they say if you've got a couple of these in your house, you get in the CO2 protection, the smoke detection. But if you've got the Nest thermostat, which is their smart thermostat for your house that can control your boiler based on when you get home, and it starts to learn things when your phone arrives on your Wi-Fi network, the thermostat says, Julian's arrived home, he probably wants the heat on, and it starts to work out, well, Julian normally arrives home after he's done the drive show, so we want to start the boiler at 5 minutes to 6, so that by the time he walks home the house is warming up. Things like that. Now, if you've got your thermostat listening to your smoke detector and your CO2 alarm, and it gets a high CO2 reading, it can go, I'm turning the boiler off, because that's probably where the CO2 is coming from.
So it's thinking ahead. What's going on with
this?
It's
now starting to get things talking to each other and using each other for information. Lastly, the cars. So more and more cars on the road now are starting to get integrated Internet of Things. I just picked four different manufacturers. Okay, they're the premium bands. So BMW, Mercedes, VW and Audi. So BMW have got a thing called Connected Drive. Your car has a SIM card. It's able to talk to BMW. It can call for roadside assistance if you have a problem. It can call them for a tyre repair if you have a flat. But it can also do things like update your dealer, and you tell it which dealer you use, update your dealer about your car's running status. And basically it will be able to tell your dealer what it needs doing before you arrive for your service. useful stuff like that.
Because I guess car manufacturers, they're already, you know, there's so little sort of user changeable thing. You can barely change your own light bulb these days because you sort of have to take half the car apart in order to do so. But they have these little onboard computers for some time, I think, which they've been able to check when you've arrived and connect up to read.
Yes, most of the modern engines have got a fully digital control system. Then you've got remote control for your car on your smartphone, on your Android or your iProduct, so that you can walk up to your phone, walk up to your car and unlock it with an app from your phone if you've gone and locked your keys inside, forgotten your keys. Some of the smart things that VW have got on theirs, you can remotely unlock and lock your car. You can check the status of whether you left the headlights on. Their battery-powered car, their E-Range, will now let you check the charging status of your battery and warn you when your battery needs charging. Audi have got a whole lot of stuff in their Audi Connect range around navigation. They've decided to use Google Maps because everyone's familiar with that, and Street View. So your navigation is now Google Maps and Street View, so it will show you the street view of the street you're driving down when you're getting to your destination.
That, I would argue, has an impact on people like TomTom and other people who were previously providing this stuff.
It's going to make it difficult for standalone sat navs to have a place if your car has got all of this intelligence and smart things like you've got your appointment in your diary in your phone, you've put the address in, your phone can then tell your car where you're going, your phone can then work out based on the traffic conditions how long it's going to take you to get there, send your destination to your car so that when you jump in your car, and your phone will have set your climate control to your preferences, when you jump in your suitably cooled or warmed car, your car will already have your destination pre-programmed.
Didn't Google buy Waze not so long ago?
Google did, another acquisition of theirs, and Waze has got a lot of the social aspect of driving in it, so you can share arrival times and so on with friends, and it starts to make it a bit more of an interactive thing than just it's telling you.
I'm quite intrigued, actually, by the way that Google is, it's probably another edition of the Gadget Guide in itself, the way that Google is sort of working behind in the background on so many different projects.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll have to do a Google special and see if we can cover some of their special projects that they've been working on.
Sounds like a good idea. We better wind up here, Lawrence, but thank you very much.
No, thank you, Julian.
Keep yourself well.